Welcome to the MSP Law Podcast, where we share legal tips and strategies that help managed service providers and technology firms build a better defense. I'm your host, Tom Favinsky. So why did Congress pass the Corporate Transparency Act? Congress was trying to get a hold of the fight against money laundering and funding terrorism. And so they passed this law so that there would be visibility into the true beneficial ownership of any particular entity that's been created in the United States. The issue of money laundering is an $800 billion industry, according to the United Nations. And it is somewhere between 2-5% of the global gross domestic product. And the United States, because of the privacy that it has in terms of company ownership, has really been a hotbed for money laundering. So how does money laundering actually work? Well, what happens is criminal activity generates money. And from there, the money gets placed into or mixed in with a business that is operating legitimately. Think of the Ozark show. And they're trying to clean the money by mixing it in with this legal cash. And then they pay their taxes. And the evidence associated with that mixing of the illegal money with the legal money gets destroyed. And then the cash that comes out of it is cleaned. And that is kind of how money laundering works. And it really works well in the United States because of all the privacy associated with company ownership. Mixing the funds of the illegal enterprise with the legal enterprise can be cumbersome when you're dealing with huge amounts of funds. So what ends up happening then is that multiple entities get formed in a strategy that's referred to as daisy chaining. And what happens is the multiple entities, you have one entity is receiving cash or being formed with a bunch of cash. Nobody knows who owns it because of the corporate anonymity rules. And it transfers it to entity number two, and nobody knows who owns entity number two. And then that gets transferred to a third entity and a fourth entity. And then what ends up, or possibly a fourth entity. Normally, if you get to the third entity, you're going to be able to successfully launder the funds because the accounts have reporting requirements when the funds are in excess of $10,000. So when entity number one gets reported on for having a transaction involving more than $10,000, the government should come in and take a look at what's going on. By that time, they've transferred it to entity number two, and that should have similar reporting requirements. And then it goes from entity number two to entity number three. And then what ends up happening is they start dissolving the entities behind it. It costs so little to form an entity. You just kind of keep that process going until it's all so mixed up that you can't track where the funds are actually coming from. The entities have been dissolved. That's a process called daisy chaining. And the whole FinCEN reporting requirements under the Corporate Transparency Act is really intended to try to target that daisy chain conspiracy. The Corporate Transparency Act was adopted by Congress in 2020, in December of 2020, and it acted as an amendment to the Bank Secrecy Act, and it was set to have final regulations going into place by the end of, towards the end of 2022, and have a take effect date on January 1st of this year, 2024. The originally passed law was vetoed by President Trump, but it had such broad support across both parties that the veto was overridden, and so the law went into effect. So what is a reporting company? The CTA, the Corporate Transparency Act, defines a reporting company as any entity, corporation, limited liability company, or otherwise, that's created by the filing of some sort of document with the Secretary of State, or it's formed under the law of a foreign country and registered to do business in any state by the filing of a document with the Secretary of State. So anytime you have to file an entity with the Secretary of State, then that's going to be a reporting company. Excluded from that, obviously, would be things that aren't filed with the Secretary of State, like partnerships or trusts would qualify it as that type of entity that gets created without the filing of a document. For each of these companies, they have to file a report that discloses for each beneficial owner, so anybody who is a beneficial owner under the CTA, they have to supply their full legal name, their date of birth, their current residential address, and something which is a unique identifier by number, like a passport or a driver's license, and an image of a document where the unique identifying number is obtained. For each of those companies that you are filing for, the deadline is January 1st, 2025 for any entity that already exists prior to January 1st of 2024. So there's a grace period of 1 year to do the filing in the event that you're an existing entity doing business as of January 1st, 2024. Again, the five pieces of information. Number one, your full legal name. Number two, your date of birth. Number three, your residential address. Number four, a unique identifying number like your passport or a driver's license. And number five, an image of that document with the identifying number. Now we have to look at what constitutes a beneficial owner. And a beneficial owner is anybody with respect to an entity that exercises substantial control over that company that's reporting or owns or controls at least 25% of the ownership interest of that reporting company. Be careful of submitting just the 25% of the ownership interest people and not those who exercise substantial control. More about that in a few minutes. What it does not include is a minor child. So if you're a minor child, you don't have to. An individual acting as a nominee or an agent on behalf of another. An individual acting solely as an employee of that company, and the only benefit that that employee is receiving is through their employment status, not as an owner. You're excluded if you're an individual whose interest is in the company by way of an inheritance or a right of inheritance, I should say, not through the inheritance. Once you inherit, you have to report, but if you have a right of inheritance, that doesn't constitute a reported individual or somebody that has to report. If you're a creditor of a company, you do not have to meet the reporting requirements unless absent some specific situations involving taking over the operations of the company. The rules from the regulations associated with the CTA define who exercises substantial control. So it's not just the 25% ownership, but if you serve as a senior officer of the company, if you have authority over appointing or removing a senior officer or a majority of the board of directors or board of governors, depending on the situation. If you have the ability to direct, determine, or have substantial influence over important decisions made by the company, decisions like the nature and scope of the business, the sale, lease, mortgages, transfer of assets of the reporting company, the reorganization, dissolution, or merger of the reporting company. If you have a say in major expenditures associated with investments or the issuance of equity or incurring significant debt, or approving an operating budget of the reporting company. So if you just have a voice in approving the operating company, you're somebody that has to report those five items. The selection or termination of business lines or geographic focus or ventures that the company is going to be involved in. Compensation schemes and incentive programs for the senior officers. If you have a voice in that, if you're on a comp committee, you are now somebody that has to report, or the company has to report you. If the entry into or termination of significant contracts is something that you have a voice in, the company has to report the information about you. Amendments of any sort of governance documents, like the Articles of Incorporation or the formation documents or bylaws or operating agreement or policies or procedures of the company, anything like that constitutes control. And then there's this kind of loosey-goosey term that says, part that says, quote, has any other form of substantial control over the reporting company, which who knows what that means, but it could be like you have check signing authority. It could be that simple. And there is no safe harbor for this. So if you fail to report somebody who has substantial control, which is really a facts and circumstances test, you're subject to a felony and daily fines. So if anything, you want to over-disclose, because if you under-disclose and say, oops, my fault, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, technically under the law, there is no way of avoiding the criminal penalty associated with that. Now, you would think with a law that is so broad that there surely are exemptions to this that will include small MSPs. The CTA really creates a bucket of exemptions that are generally, if the company is reporting under some other governmental process, like the SEC regulated entities or bank holding companies or credit unions, publicly traded companies, if there are reporting under those rules, then you get exempt from the reporting under this rule. But otherwise, it is very broad. Now, there is one exemption where a lot of MSPs may be able to jump into that exemption, and it is the large operating company exemption. It's really more of a medium operating company exemption. But in that exemption, if you employ more than 20 employees on a full-time basis, you have filed income taxes demonstrating gross receipts of over $5 million in the prior year, and finally, if you have a physical office in the United States, that's an and. So all three of those, 20 employees, $5 million in gross receipts or more, and you have a physical office in the U.S., then you're likely exempt from having to comply with the CTA. Now, again, keep in mind, this is all about trying to prevent money laundering, so it makes sense if you're a large established entity that the risk of money laundering occurring through that larger entity is diminished. It bears repeating. So there are three prongs to this. Number one, you have to have 20 full-time employees. The full-time definition is borrowed from the Affordable Care Act. You have to have federal income taxes, tax returns filed that demonstrate that you have more than $5 million in gross receipts in the prior year. If you slip below that, then you have to report. If you go above it, then you're exempt again. And then you have to have a physical office within the boundaries of the United States. And a physical office can't be a home office. It has to be a corporate office. In this world of mergers and acquisitions, it's not uncommon to acquire an entity that doesn't qualify for under the three prongs. But if it's an entity that is owned by an exempt entity, then by definition, the subsidiary entity is relieved of the reporting obligations. I discussed the timing rules associated with existing entities that were in operation prior to January 1st of 2024. But if you are forming an entity after January 1st of 2024, then the rule is a little different. You have to do your filing within 30 days of going into business. There's a grace period of 90 days during the January 1st to March 31st time period, but it reverts back to the 30-day period thereafter. That extension to 90 days is really the only relief that we've gotten thus far. There is a case that says that the statute is unconstitutional, and as a result, the plaintiff in that case is not required to do the filing, but that's the only person, that plaintiff is the only person that's not required to do the filing until that case rolls up through the appellate courts and is affirmed or reversed. That 30-day time period is also in place for companies that existed prior to January 1st of 2024 that have a change in that substantial control component. So if there's a change, like somebody moves to a new location, you have to resubmit and amend your CTA filing to reflect that change. So that is 30 days. You don't get a year on that one. Once the entity that existed prior to January 1st, 2024, files its document with the CTA, amendments have to be completed within 30 days of the change. What happens if you don't file timely? Well, there is a civil penalty of not more than $500 for each day that there's a violation and it can't exceed $10,000, or there's imprisonment for not more than 2 years, or there's both. There is some safe harbor relief for folks that thought they were complying and failed to, and they could demonstrate that it's not willful, that they were doing it in the way that they understood it, that there would be some relief if they do the filing pretty much prior before they get caught, then they would have some relief from those penalties. So it's really important to note that this is an ongoing compliance requirement. And because of its ongoing nature, the people that stand in a position of being in substantial control can impact the organization by failing to provide notice of things like when they move to a new address, or their passport changed, or they get a new driver's license number, things like that. So you may want to look at your operating agreements to address that issue, like who's going to pay the fine for it, who's going to be liable for it, provide obligations for them to notify. So it is an ongoing piece, and it's 30 days. It's not like, well, we'll just take care of it every year when we file our income taxes or when we reactivate the company at the Secretary of State or do a filing with the Secretary of State. This is something that has to be looked at every 30 days to determine whether or not there's been a change that requires reporting. Also understand that this will impact your exit from the MSP business when you go to sell to another MSP or an investor or institutional investors. They will, as a part of their due diligence, want to understand that all of these compliance pieces have taken place, that policies have been implemented to address that so that they don't have successor liability associated with the non-compliance. You may want to look at your operating agreement or your bylaws and address these new obligations in those agreements. You may want to look at your employment contract to address it there. You may want to have it as a part of your employee policy and procedure manual. Probably will want to empower an individual to be the compliance officer within the organization to make sure that these steps, these changes, are being adequately reported. And you probably want to look at the buy-sell agreement or shareholder agreements to make sure that that's addressed as well in those shareholder agreements, that each shareholder is agreeing or each member is agreeing to provide the relevant data in order to keep the company in good standing. Your company will likely want to address methods of securing the data that it's collecting with respect to folks that are in control or have a substantial beneficial interest in the entity so that that personally identifiable information doesn't leak out. And, you know, you may want to use encrypted solutions, but any solution where you're protecting that data is going to be necessary. So that's the Corporate Transparency Act in a nutshell. It's not super easy, and be wary of accepting solutions where it's a static type of program where you're doing one filing and then it's over with and you're ignoring everything else. You really have to address this fundamentally from a legal perspective across your governing documents, across your policy and procedure manual. Do a tight analysis of who needs to be reported, and, you know, have a safe method for them to store that data so that their information isn't being compromised, and really a process and procedure for updating and keeping it current so that you're in compliance.
Well, that's it for this episode. This is Tom Popinski. I'm an attorney with Virtus Law. My team is called the MSP Law Team. We serve MSPs, and we'd like to chat with you. Feel free to reach out to us by email. My contact information is Tom, T-O-M, at Virtus Law, D like Victor, I-R-T like Tom, U-S, like United States, L-A-W.com.